Rewind and Digress is a FakeShemp.net podcast proudly presented by Viewlorium. Alternative movies, alternative streaming, totally free at Viewlorium.com.
Welcome to Rewind and Digress, where we hit pause on the now and track back to one of our favourite films, line it up, take a shot, succumb to a psych out, and ultimately learn that all our loved ones are dating Squeak. I'm Jarek, and I'm with Glenn and Sean, and we're FakeShemp.net. On this episode, we're rewinding back to 1998 for the unsung comedy classic Basketball, co-written and directed by comedy legend David Zucker. So, gentlemen, Glenn, I'll cross to you first. When was the first time you saw Basketball?
It was one of those time-coded preview video cassettes at the video store. You know, back then when you worked in video store, you got all those preview tapes and things like that. And no one knew where it came from. It was this movie with these two guys that South Park is sort of, you know, was relatively new at the time. So no one really knew who they were. So I knew David Zucker.
Mm-hmm. Zucker. Pancake.
What?
Look like he's going to cut it, so I just thought I'd throw a pancake in.
So yeah, I mean, yeah, it surprised me. It was a movie that came from nowhere, and it really, really, I love the hell out of this one.
Excellent. And what about you, Sean? When was the first time you saw Basketball?
Well, it was towards, obviously, it came out 20 years ago, 1998. And that was towards the end of my high school time, because I graduated in 2000. But in about 1999, I got my first sort of proper girlfriend, you know, proper relationship. And through that, I ended up with this is a long story to a short question. And I ended up with this social network of guys who were all like new school ska punks.
Right.
So yep. I was into Real Big Fish before this film came out. And then we heard that Real Big Fish was, you know, Real Big Fish, they're going to be on the soundtrack to this film, Basketball. We're like, what the hell's Basketball? They're like, the guys that did South Park. We're like, we love South Park. So we were all just sitting around waiting, you know, with bated breath, waiting for this film to finally drop. And then it did eventually hit the video shelves. And we just lapped it up. So it would have been pretty much as soon as it dropped, that's when we got it.
That's the exact same story about how I came across It's Pat, because Ween were in that one. And right. I was a massive Ween fan. Yeah. And
well,
there's the digression of the show.
There you go, yeah. We digressed pretty early in the piece. I was going to say, your story is pretty similar to mine in that I was a huge Real Big Fish fan back in the mid to late 90s. And the first thing I heard of Basketball was on the Real Big Fish message board. They'd done a call out for fans to come along to be extras in a movie that was being shot that they'd be performing in, and they'd be performing a free concert after the shoot. And I was like, fuck, what is this movie? You know, Real Big Fish are going to be in a movie. Amazing. And then through that very same message board, maybe a year later, you know, it came out, it was Basketball. And I was like, yes, I can't wait to see this movie.
That's got to be the most unlikely expectation, though. Like, what were you thinking that we're going to be in? Like, what kind of movie?
Well,
no,
but I had no idea of it being like a sports movie, you know, at the time, because I only saw the title Basketball, and it was like it wasn't really, you could type Basketball and you're going to get a whole lot of information out of the internet, then you might wait 3 days to get a scene clip or a trailer. But yeah, I was like, what? Basketball? Okay, and so found out that obviously Trey Parker and Matt Stone were involved. They were both starring in it. It was directed by David Zucker.
Zucker.
And then I was like, how long is it going to be before I see this film? And it was the longest wait ever. And in that time, obviously, Take On Me was released, which was the single from the film that was off the soundtrack. I had the soundtrack long before the film. And I waited and waited for this film to come out. They pre-trailered the film in the cinemas. And they even had posters up in cinema foyers. And it never dropped in cinemas. And then, yeah, finally turned up on video in December 99. I remember renting it like the first week it was released and watching it twice within 24 hours with my sister, and I loved it. It was amazing. So as we mentioned, Trey Parker and Matt Stone are in this film. They play the lead roles in it. They were handpicked by David Zucker for the roles in the film, and that was before the before South Park had actually aired in the States. They were cast in the roles.
Really?
Yeah, because they were cast back in 97, and the series itself didn't drop until late 97. So that time they were nobodies, and David Zucker had to fight with the studio to get them in the film, which meant that he had to compromise and agree to shoot the film for $20 million, which was a considerably low budget considering how high concept the film was. It was a lot of everything involved.
Well, there's
got to
be
film.
So much design, because there's nothing that exists quite like Basketball.
It
so
feels like it was tailored for them too.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So he must have been aware of their work previously.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is do you know how he became aware of them? Because obviously everybody knows Trey Parker and Matt Stone purely from South Park, and then things like Cannibal and all that, they all came after the fact.
Actually, Cannibal came before, because Cannibal was 93. It didn't get released straight away. Oh, yeah, I know. But the wider audience didn't know about any of that until after South Park.
Those in the film world would have definitely had his finger on the pulse,
I'd say. And I'd say Orgasmo may have been screening it. It hadn't premiered until late 97 at Tribeca. Oh, not Tribeca, sorry, it was Toronto. It premiered at, and funnily enough, Orgasmo actually made it to video in Australia before Basketball dropped on video, because it was like 14 months after the US theatrical that Basketball finally arrived in Australia. You bastard got to watch a time-coded preview tape before a film that both of us were sweating hard on this movie coming out. That broke my heart when I heard it. I just wish
I could remember what the film that doubled up on it with.
There wasn't double tapes? Yeah.
So another compromise that David Zucker had to make was in casting Diane
Backer.
Little bitch, Squeak. Squeak Scolari, that's the character he plays. Casting him in the film, because he'd worked with Trey Parker and Matt Stone previously on Cannibal the Musical and Orgasmo. So yeah, another little compromise.
And they would have gone to university together, yeah?
I don't know what their history is, but they'd obviously known each other for nearing a decade prior to it. Because he'd done voice work on South Park, but also done voice work, I think, on some of the shorts that they had done prior to South Park. The cast, anyway, is rounded up by Yasmin Bleeth, Jenny McCarthy, Ernest Borgnine, and Robert Vaughn as a villain. In fact, it's Robert Vaughn's 100th film that he made. They presented him with a cake, and if you watch some of the special features on the DVD, you see them, and he makes this bold claim that it's one of the best, if not the best, film that he's ever worked on in terms of the working experience of working on it, not necessarily the end product of the film. And I thought, that's a bold claim.
It is. And did you mention Robert Stack?
Oh, of course, from Unsolved Mysteries. He has a cameo in the Unsolved Mysteries.
Second David Zucker film. He did Airplane.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
He was probably cleaning up at the time, too, because he did the voice work in Beavis and Butthead Do America.
I thought you meant like he's the janitor at the
Anyway, let's talk about, you know, we've talked about a bit about the film, but we actually haven't explained what the premise of the film is. So this is the part where I talk about the official synopsis, studio synopsis for the film, which this time is actually quite accurate. The last few that I think I've read that have pulled to pieces, this one's fairly accurate, and this is what they've got to say about it. It says, a hilarious comedy about two guys who invent a game in their driveway that quickly becomes a national obsession. When childhood friends Joe Cooper, Parker, and Doug Remus Stone are challenged to a pickup basketball game, they propose a new sport combining basketball and baseball. As the ridiculous game unexpectedly becomes a hit, the friends are suddenly faced with a greedy businessman who has plans of his own.
So there we have it.
So that's the story, and that's an accurate telling of what the film's
about.
That's
pretty much exactly what the
film
is.
And of all the films, it probably didn't need an accurate, you know,
I know.
Pitch. It's basketball.
That's right. It speaks for itself.
I want to touch on some of the themes because, I mean, yes, it's a stupid comedy, but it has some pretty decent themes about it. It's got the whole underdog thing. You've got, you know, the lead characters, Joe and Doug, you know, they turn up a party in the intro of the movie, you know, and they're pretty much belittled by the people they went to, where they went to school with. And that results in them playing and inventing basketball there on the spot.
Just
against two
hanging
jocks.
Out, playing Nintendo.
That's pretty much been talk.
And that whole theme carries through to the relationship with the film's villain, Baxter Kane, Robert Vaughn's character. They have a kind of David and Goliath battle because he's this greedy, wealthy, you know, sports entrepreneur. And, you know, they're trying to wrestle with the fact of keeping basketball, you know, what it was, you know, an innocent game free of capitalism and whatnot.
They've taken a whole lot of tropes from all different sort of subgenres of, this sort of thing. And they've stitched it all together in a very David Zucker kind of film.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So another theme, inclusion. I wanted to mention Ernest Borgnine's character. Ted Denslow has a monologue in the movie about basketball being basically a fresh start, that, you know, you can't trade players anymore. All the players are going to be played the same. And the game itself is a game that can be played by anybody. So there's this whole feeling
it's like an anti-capitalist film.
Yeah. Wrapped up in a pretty capitalist package from Universal.
A $20 million capitalist package.
So let's talk about the genesis of basketball, right? Do you know, like, the story, the background story?
Yeah, totally do.
Did you want to tell us a little bit about it, or do you want to hear me talk about it?
Well, you can do it.
Okay, then. So the genesis lies in reality. It was a game that David Zucker used to play in his driveway with friends from about 82 through to 92. And it became so popular, in fact, the local TV news station in LA came out and covered their championships, which is really odd.
No, it didn't.
No, dead set. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. And because, you know, he had such an affinity for this thing, he carried it with him for a number of years and tried to find ways to turn it into something. And one of those things was he shot a pilot for a TV series, a game show, for it, hosted by Chris Rock, that obviously didn't pan out. And then he worked on multiple drafts for a TV series.
I only knew part of this origin. I did not know all of that.
Isn't
about
that bizarre?
The TV series. So, it's like it's a knockout style game show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really odd.
Which would be really cool. I'd watch that.
Might have been around the time of, like, say, American Gladiators and that, too, in the States. So it would have been all the rage.
Yeah, probably would have been, actually, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And so, yeah, there was the concept of turning into a TV series, like an actual, you know, fictionalized, dramatized series. But then, you know, he enlisted different writers over time and then decided to go the feature route with it. And that's obviously what we've ended up with today.
Because the written by credits on Basketball as it stands...
There's like about four
There's like
writers
four or? Writers. Yeah. And that's obviously just the writers that they would be inclined to, you know, God knows how many, you know, script doctors or hands has passed through. But to credit four people by itself, and that's a lot of hands to be touching the script.
Totally. I guess they didn't think it was going to be nominated for any Academy Awards. So they wouldn't have to wrestle over that. And Oscar trophy on the night.
Having said that, like, this is a very sort of a different kind of David Zucker film compared to the previous films that he had made. Like, it's got a different flavor. There's a few moments there, like particularly my actual favorite gag in the movie, if I can talk about this for a second.
Yeah, well, I was actually going to digress. Favorite scenes.
Okay,
so
well,
here you go.
My favorite right at the start when they're introducing everything, they're talking about the decline of sport.
Yes.
In Latin, it's become a parade for all the showboats. My favorite moments when the players are doing the river dance.
Yes.
But it's not the river dance I love. It's the coach joining in.
Yeah.
You know that scene where he just links arms with the player and it's like about a 2 second and grab her, but it's such a well-executed little gag, and I find Zucker's work is full of well-executed moments.
Yeah,
you know, and this is a film that doesn't have the moments like his other films, which are very almost episodical in their narrative or whatever. This one's a bit different, but that is classic Zucker.
Totally. So that would probably be your favorite.
That is my favorite
scene?
Gag in the whole film.
It's like
totally.
Yeah, it's a small gag, but it's a good one.
My I actually have two. There's two that kill me every. There's two gags in it that kill me.
Can
every
I guess
single.
One of them?
Yeah, go.
Is it the hospital scene?
It's the hospital scene.
Is it when he steps into the bedpans?
No.
And wears him his shoes.
That's mental. No, it's a bit where he's like, he goes, damn it, we're losing him. He goes, do you know what you're doing? He goes, what does it look like? He goes, an execution?
Oh my God, that's such a good scene.
Because it's just played so done.
What
line,
do you reckon is
so
the little Star Trek moment? Where he goes, oh, I love you though.
Yeah, I love it. I always have. And then my next favorite one is after that. Oh, maybe no, it was before that when he goes out and he gets absolutely blitzed with the kids. And then he has to show up and he has to try and get three home runs. And then the third home run, he just starts sleeping. And then, and then somebody throws off an air horn and he just wakes up and just wakes up and throws the ball like every single time. It just slays me.
It is a really good moment. Yeah, it's the same as the coach scene. Like, it's that tiny little thing
just
that's
perfectly timed.
Only Zucker knows how to do.
Pretty much my favorite scene also. It's like one element of a scene. It's a scene where Squeak turns up at Doug and Joe's place to move in because he's lost his job due to them. And he moves in. He's shown the room he's going to be in. He's like, this is pretty sweet, the bed. And then they're like, no, that's not your bed, that's Jenkins' bed. And they point to the box in the corner and he has to sleep in that. And it's like, it's a great scene, but my favorite bit is right at the end where he's like, yeah, I think this is going to work. The next minute, Jenkins jumps through the window and takes him down. It's like this slight second. And I was like watching it with Danny, my wife, and I was saying, hold on. And then Jenkins jumps. I was like, that's the money shot.
I love just before that.
Just
he goes like, if you guys rip on me another 40 times.
Yeah. Like, another 14, 15, 16 times or something.
I'm out of here. You guys rip on me 13 or 14 more times. Shit. I'm out of here. It
amazing.
Is very, it's infinitely quotable as well. Like,
what about the polishing the chrome?
Oh, yeah. That's an ongoing gag throughout the movie. Poor old Jenny McCarthy. Now,
laying the carpet.
It's like, oh, those corners were really tough.
Some music in the film. We mentioned earlier, obviously, Real Big Fish had the lead single, Take On Me. The soundtrack had a whole bunch of those sort of swing and ska bands of the era. You had like this, I think it was the Cherry Pop and Daddies. They were on there. Goldfinger were on there. The Ernies, Nerf Herder, Super Suckers, and the meme-tastic Smash Mouth. With Why Can't We Be Friends on there as well, which
God.
I think might have been in one of the
They must have made still know a what fucking you did last fortune summer in those days.
Or one of those horror movies at the time as well.
Something like that,
yeah. Maybe a Scream too.
That was the prime time for all those kind of, like you said, those ska swing bands.
Mm.
You know, Royal Chrome of the
It was Harry like Pop a tiny Dan, window in time, though, that they got into movies as well. Because they were like in Father's Day with Billy Crystal and Robin Williams.
Were in Swingers. Cherry Pop and Daddies were in Swingers.
It was a brief time. It wasn't quite as long as the new metal bands got to be in horror movies, because they pretty much covered the late 90s into the early 2000s.
Well, yeah, I mean, like even beyond, you know, Offspring showed up in Idle Hands.
That was fantastic, oh, man, that so scene. Good. They do beheaded off Ignition. Yeah. And he literally gets beheaded. Yeah. It's amazing. Now, the score, Ira Newborn, who'd worked with David Zucker before in the past and done a lot of crazy classic 80s movies, like all the John Hughes stuff, and lends his talents to doing a pretty zany comedy score in it.
He does really well, given the scope of the actual, you know, the soundtrack, the artists on the soundtrack. He does well to match it. Like it doesn't feel particularly obnoxious, but it doesn't feel misguided either. Mm. Like it lands perfectly in that. Like I say, it's a very designed. I mean, it's never going to win an Oscar, but it's a very designed film, and the score fits perfectly.
It didn't win an Oscar.
Well, funnily enough, the next thing I was going to tackle was the success Oscars. Or lack thereof with the film, because we mentioned earlier it was made for $20 million. The film was a massive failure. On its opening weekend, the film made just over $3 million at the US box office. Didn't even debut in the top 10. It debuted at number 11. It was actually just the number 10 was Mafia.
Mm. Oh my God. Oh, that was by Jim Abrahams.
Yeah.
Who's David Zucker's old cohort.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, totally. And number 12 was one of my personal favorites, Disturbing Behavior, on its second week of release, dropped from number 7 to 12. But actually made a lot more money at the US box office than Basketball.
Oh, but no, the but big back it up. I'm like fascinated by this whole Zucker. Abrahams kind of.
That's the weird thing. Battle. It gets even weirder, dude, because.
Because Mafia wasn't a particularly well-received film either. From
was that Lloyd Bridges?
It did.
Lloyd Bridges and Jay Moore,
It did probably about $10 million more than Basketball. I think it might have done about $17 million at the US box office in its entire run, whereas Basketball only did $7 million. But it definitely debuted in the top 10. It came out a week before. It came out July 24th, so it was out a week before Basketball.
Yeah, right.
But 2 weeks before Basketball was released was Something About Mary, which pretty much cleaned up. There was no room in the box office for any more comedies. But here's the other weird one that was released in this month of comedies that came out, was Wrongfully Accused.
I was about to say, where does Wrongfully Accused come into this? The Pat Proft film, which is my favourite Pat Proft film outside of Police Academy.
Yep.
You know, it's a really funny
movie. So how weird
but
is
then
that?
I mean, Wrongfully obviously, Accused. The tie back then, obviously, is that Leslie Nielsen was in. You know, like, oh my God, this is just...
I know.
That's really bizarre.
Isn't it strange? Like, yeah, it's...
He was the go-to slapstick guy.
Yeah. I mean, because that wouldn't have been that far beyond Mr. Magoo as well. Mr. Magoo must have only came out a year before
that. They were both shot in Vancouver around the same time, because I remember he was in town for it when I was living there, and he was in town for both of them consecutively.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go figure. Really bizarre.
Which was a Disney film, Mr. Magoo.
Yeah, it was. That's pretty funny.
Around the same time as Dudley Do-Right. Which was another film. And that was directed by Hugh Wilson, who did Police Academy. So, boom, bam.
Bam.
And see that? Right back to the beginning. Continue, Jared.
Well.
Viewlorium is the place to stream cult movies for free. Like, I'm talking mutated sharks, megastorms, exploitation, low-budget indies, and shit tons of other stuff. Like, Viewlorium boasts a huge selection of the good, the bad, and the weird in between. FakeShip.net uses their service. Mm-hmm. Guilty as charged. Be rad like them. Viewlorium. Alternative streaming. Visit Viewlorium.com. Like,
how? So David Zucker.
Zucker.
What would be your favourite David Zucker film?
Sean? You don't ask someone that, but you're asking Sean, so go.
Yeah, you've got a bit of time to think about it.
Yeah, no, I genuinely, honestly think that it's Basketball. I really do.
Right.
Okay. Right. But if it's not, and this is going to cause controversy, right? I really didn't like Scary Movie or Scary Movie 2, and I thought the Scary Movie films took a big step up once he took over in Part 3.
Well, he brought them into his universe.
Yeah. I agree. I think they got better.
Yeah, I think they got better.
When he came on board.
And Charlie Sheen's in them.
Yeah. So my vote would be, you know, either Basketball, and if I didn't have Basketball, I'd probably say Scary Movie 3.
Wow, that's a huge statement.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not even joking. Scary Movie 3 floors me, kills me.
Yeah, it's good.
I don't know why it kills me so much.
But I love that he bought into his universe, but he kept Anna Faris through them. Like,
yeah, totally.
It was really cool.
What feels, because it was like a franchise, it's pretty much felt like it's built off what he kind of created.
Yeah.
And they didn't quite get that far with. I never understood why they were so popular when they came
out.
But I kept watching them. I kept going to the movies to see them, hoping that they'd be funny eventually.
What
it
kind
turned
of,
out all right after about the third
What kind
one.
Of ruins the fact that the first one is a Wayne's Brother film, right?
Yeah.
If they left it as one standalone film, it would have had much more resonance than they did number two, which had a completely different feel to number one. And that was different to number three and four. Like, it was a really disjointed franchise, and sort of I feel like David brought it all in line to something much more formulaic.
Cohesive,
and,
totally.
And yeah, totally. Totally. You going to ask me the same question?
No, Glenn. I'm going to tell you what my favourite David Zucker film is.
Aww. Yep.
Oh, you missed your cue. That's it. No. Tell me what your favourite David Zucker film is.
Well, it's got to be Flying High / Airplane, surely. Right. Or Makes Kentucky sense. Fried Movie, which we have covered on a podcast before. Yeah, Kentucky Fried Movie is absolutely gold.
Classic.
But then you got Top Secret. Like,
Top Secret is very good.
It's incredible.
Val Kilmer's so goddamn cool in that film.
It's a really hard one for me. Then you got the Naked Gun movies, you know?
I was never a big fan of the Naked Guns.
Oh, I'm a huge
I love
fan.
The
Naked Guns. And have you seen...
The first two mainly. 33 and a third I could probably leave, but I'll definitely watch.
But have you seen Police Squad? Files from Police Squad? Like,
that's great.
Yes. That is a phenomenal
my
show.
My brother and I used to have like a little black and white TV in my bedroom that had rabbit ears.
I would argue that series is better than the film series.
I think it probably is.
My it works better in a shorter episodic sort of format than a feature length. Yep.
But I think if I had to really sort of choose just one, I've got to go with Airplane.
Airplane. Now, this is the beauty of FakeShemp.net is because I'm not choosing any of the films you guys have mentioned. I'm actually going to go with Ruthless People.
Oh, I knew you were.
There's something about it. I knew he was going to say that.
That is such a Jarrett film. That's a touchstone film, isn't it?
It's a touchstone.
It's got that poster art that he loves.
Oh, it's a great poster. Great poster. Great soundtrack.
And that is also a very non-David Zucker
kind
of
film. It is, totally.
Yeah.
It's because it's... You know, after you've had all those sort of silly over-the-top films, this one's sort of more straightforward kind of comedy. But man, what a cast. Like Bette Midler, Danny DeVito, Judge Reinhold, and Supergirl herself, Helen Slater.
Helen Slater,
you just watched Supergirl recently, didn't you?
Supergirl was one of the few films I've managed to sneak in. And Helen Slater was the best thing in it.
Yeah.
She was really good in it.
Helen Slater was in that all elusive American adventure movie, National Lampoons, that we still haven't been able to discover.
Right, which brings us back to another podcast.
Different
Too much
show
Inception.
Entirely.
Great era for Bette Midler. I even have a little thing for it.
I have a thing for Bette Midler, too. I don't know why. Because I shouldn't.
I know, you shouldn't. No, it's weird.
I still
though.
Do.
It is weird.
I know. Yeah.
I follow her on Facebook. Oh, and right.
Really?
She's married to one of the Kipper kids. Oh, my God.
I don't know Kipper
kids, most avant-garde comedy double duo in the history of comedy.
Really?
Do you remember UHF?
Yeah.
Yes.
They're the two guys going, Yeah. And they're in Forbidden Zone.
That's why. Yeah. Yes, that's why. That said, it brings us to the tail end of the show. I normally talk about what the best home ent release is of the film that we've discussed. And in this case, there is really only one at this present time definitive release. It's the US Blu-ray. It's the only Blu-ray anywhere in the world at this point in time. And it is a piece of shit. It's a dated master. It looks like it's taken from the exact same master they used for the DVD. It's marginally better in picture quality than the DVD.
Sure, even because I was watching the DVD, obviously, for this in preparation. And I was thinking, I had to go into IMDb. I'm just like, they shoot this in like Super 16 or something.
So rough.
It looks really grainy. Like super, I was really surprised.
It's super grainy for a film that really in that period shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
Makes no sense.
Minimum $20 million budget. Surely they should have shot it.
And the production design is so squeaky.
Yeah.
Like
absolutely.
It's a really polished production design. Yeah.
The film's actually quite colourful, which you wouldn't notice so much on the Blu-ray. There's no vibrancy whatsoever. It's quite flat, but it's a very colourful film.
But I got it from the DVD. Like, it just pops off the screen for me, you know, in every way. The crowd scenes, it's all greens and blues. And there's a good... I just remembered a joke I love about the film. Just if I can digress for 1 second.
Yeah, yeah.
When he crashes through that fake facade of the garage and there's actual tools inside.
Yeah, that's great. Who thinks of that stuff?
Let's put a lawnmower in there.
Now, look, it's the 20th anniversary of the film, and if there ever was a time to do a definitive release of the film, which I feel like it's got a big enough cult following, you know, it doesn't get talked about as regularly as it should, but look, Trey Parker and Matt Stone obviously gone on to massive things. David Zucker's, you know, he's... I don't think he's done a film lately,
American Carol was his last one, which was that film. Very conservative, right-wing take on America's obsession with terrorism and and you know, and the right-wing media and all that kind of stuff. It's a strange film.
It had
Chris Farley's brother. What's his name? Kevin Farley.
Yes, that's right. And he's playing the Michael Moore character.
It had Dennis Hopper in it, and it had a whole lot of, like, Kelsey Grammer and a whole lot of other...
It was a couple of years ago, though, wasn't it?
That was over 10 years ago.
Yeah. It was like 2000 and... 8 or something? Was it post Scary Movie? Did he do Scary Movie 5?
No, he didn't.
He did 3 and 4. And who did 5? I can't remember who did 5, but no, he didn't. He did 3 and 4.
Right. But because this material obviously is quite close to his heart, given that it began from something he had, you know, had done, you know, in real life, had started this basketball league, it seems like something that I think he'd had further sort of desire to want to comment on. So a commentary track from him would be insane.
It would be amazing. I don't know where Trey Parker and Matt Stone would stand on this film.
That's fine. Look, I don't care so much if they're not a part of it. Although, that said, there is a great clip that's up on YouTube, and it's Matt Stone talking about Basketball 2 and him wanting to just make a faux trailer for Basketball 2. So the film will never happen, but the trailer was like, you've just got to listen to it. In fact, we probably should just sample that.
Trey and I have been talking about doing Basketball 2.
But not actually doing it. Or actually doing it.
We've been talking about just putting a bunch of money together and just shooting a sweet trailer that looks like a Michael Bay movie. And the whole thing is it starts in a Casbah, in Morocco or some nondescript Arab country. It's there's all this stuff, and there's chickens and all this stuff moving through the main bazaar. But then, you know, you look under there. I think some movie started this way. You look under the blanket, and there's a nuclear bomb. You know what I mean? And then it goes past, and then you rack focus to me, and I'm playing chess with like a little fake turban thing on or something like that, drinking tea. And all of a sudden, it's like I start running down. You know, we just do this huge, huge intro to a massive movie, and then you just keep cutting to like it's just like foreign intrigue. You know. Times five, and it has nothing to do with basketball at all, except for Dean's in it, Trey's in it, I'm in it, basketball. You know, really, we just want to do the trailer and have it like pay for it to be in movie theaters.
For like super fans of basketball, the idea of creating a trailer to a film that doesn't exist, that's what kind of fresh hell is this?
Ultimate cruelty.
That's
Mel Brooks territory.
When you hear the concept for the trailer, you're just like, oh my God, that sounds fucking
History of the World
mental.
Part 2. It's been done.
Yeah, it's true. It has been done. Yeah, you're right.
Mental. But yeah, so look, you know, a special edition Blu-ray wouldn't go astray. And the other thing too I've heard David say is that before the film went to test screenings, it was sitting at like just over 2 hours, which is quite long for any comedy, unless it's directed by Judd Apatow. Yeah. And then, you know, it's customary.
It's not long enough.
But yeah, exactly. So I think they weaned it down to about 105, 108 minutes. So, but there's obviously a fair bit of exercise footage. There'd be a ton more bloopers. And considering the amount of stuff that Trey and Matt improvised on set, there'd be some hilarious stuff. So yeah, it would be fantastic if we saw a definitive Blu-ray.
I think there are three voice references to South Park in the movie.
There is.
Well,
there is, yeah.
What do you think of those? Are they?
There's the Cartman one where he's you know, doing the psych out to the chubby chap. There's the one where
Mr. Garrison one in the locker room.
Yep.
Kids.
And then the one where he turns, where he says, where Ernest Borgnine had said something to him. He says something of some relevance that makes him think. And he's like,
yes,
and
that's
he turns
right.
And does the serious sort of, you know.
That's exactly right, yeah.
Yeah. So, look, that really wraps it up. I want to thank you guys. It's the first time the three of us have been on an episode of Rewind and Drop
Base. Is that it?
Well, I don't think. Is there any more that you want to add about basketball? I think we've talked about it a fair bit. Probably talked about it more than anyone has in the last 10-odd years.
Yeah, it's a bizarre thing. I wish it wasn't relegated to such a cult status. And in fact, the circles that we move in, everybody knows it. So you forget how much of a cult film it actually is. But it's... Yeah, definitely should be.
What about the psych outs? Do you have any favorite psych outs?
No.
The L foil.
Oh yes, dear God,
genius.
So, I've got four.
Right.
Can I say them, please?
Yeah, go for it, man.
Vagina. Yeah. The Aussie reference.
What's a vagina?
And then there's the got milk scene.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah.
There's the fat liposuction out of Marlon Brando's ass.
Oh, that's so
gross.
Like,
what am I doing?
It's all salty and warm. Guy ate a lot of pork. And then there was I Fucked Your Sister. It's a classic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I want to know is what happened to Yasmin Bleeth?
Time.
But I mean, like, if you look at her IMDb credits, it wasn't that long after Basketball showed up.
Mm.
She just vanished.
which maybe, I don't know. I haven't looked into it, whether she was like Rick Moranis and decided to leave, you know, at a time.
Like Bridget Fonda, just stop making films.
Stop being cast.
Well,
but maybe. Look at Jennifer Jason Leigh. She's amazing. She continues. She's doing some of her best stuff these days. It's incredible.
What the hell? Well, how did you get to Single White Female?
Because I'm thinking Bridget Fonda, yeah, Jennifer Jason Leigh come up around the same period in Single White Female. Yeah, that was the connection.
That was a good film.
It's a classic thriller.
Massive digression.
Love it. Yeah,
love it.
You want to do a second wrap up?
Okay, may as well. Anything more to add, lads?
No.
Yes.
Okay.
No,
so
not really.
Okay,
no.
Really? All right. Well, then I'll give a final shout out to the Screamy Meanies, who supply our intro and outro music, the theme to Rewind and Digress. And thank you, gentlemen. I look forward to doing this again with you real soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.